All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are talking about Disney's Cruella, which is an origin story for Cruella de Vil, the Disney villain who skins puppies. This is a strange concept for a movie, but as we talk about, and joining me for this one is Gerald from Two Peas on a Podcast. As we talk about during the conversation, they do a pretty good job of riding the line of going as dark as this character could be and also making it a fun film for families about a villain who, in theory, would grow to eventually start murdering puppies. But anyway, we'll get into that in the conversation. Before we get to it, I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also rate and review us over on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. We would love some more 5-star reviews. We're up to, I think, like 70 something of them now. Let's get that up to triple digits. I'd love to see it one of these days. You can also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join the Facebook group Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And don't forget about our Produced by David Rosen. That's me, David Rosen. Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I combine exclusive and bonus and advanced content from this podcast, from Awesome Movie Year, which is another great movie podcast that I produce, from my music career, and just from a whole bunch of other great projects that I am involved with. Lots of content over there on the Produced by David Rosen Patreon. Check it out. It's patreon.com/bydavidrosen. So, without any further ado, let's get into the conversation talking about Cruella. All right, so we are talking about Cruella, and joining me today is Gerald from Two Peas on a Podcast. How's it going, Gerald?
What's up, brother? How are you? It's going good. I was off work today, which like never happens on a weekday. So,
well, that rules.
That's why I was like, let's do it today, man, because it's always a good day when I get a day off.
Was that like a 4-day weekend?
No, you know, I'm in the restaurant business, so I didn't have the weekend off like a lot of folks did. I had to work. I was off Sunday, but I had to work Saturday and Monday.
Sure.
And off today, and then off tomorrow, and then back Thursday for like a 10-day stretch. So,
yeah, never ends. But
What are you gonna do?
I'm glad to have you here today, though. So this will be fun. Do you think we should put on like a big theatrical effect while we're talking the whole time? I think that would get kind of exhausting quick, but you know, it would fit though.
It might be too much. It might be too much.
Well, before we get into Cruella, it is your first time here on Piecing It Together. I've been on your podcast, but why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners here and what your podcast is all about?
Sure, David. Well, thanks, man. Thanks for having me, and you know, thanks for coming on my show. It wasn't too long ago you came over there, and we talked about movie soundtracks, from what I recall, which was great. But yeah, I do a fun top five countdown show, right? So my podcast is a different guest host with me every week, and they usually come up with a topic, and we just count down our top five favorite things in that topic. It's probably 80% movies, and then the other 20% is mixed up between TV and music usually. Every once in a while, there's a pop culture. Like this week, as we're sitting here, our breakfast cereals, our top five cereals is on there. But yeah, it's movies, music, TV, pop culture, and it's just a different top five every week. And then I've really been getting into the YouTube space too, so I'm trying to pump up my YouTube channel. It's just youtube.com/twopeasonapodcast. You can look me up over there for movie reviews, trailer reactions. I do a monthly wrap-up show where I review all the movies I watch for that month. And I'm having fun doing that too. I'm not getting a ton of views, but I'm having fun creating and doing it. So hopefully people look me up. But I really appreciate you having me, man. And I'm excited to talk about this movie with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw your initial reaction to it. And I kind of have the same feelings that this is, if not the best, like one of the better of these Disney live action things based on their previous properties. And I don't love the movie. I mean, there's definitely things about it that I think don't quite work that well, but there are so many things about it that do work, and it is just a lot of fun, I think.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I mean, it's definitely not perfect, but when you're comparing it to its predecessors, which I know kind of is the premise of your show to begin with, but in speaking specifically about Disney kind of origin stories and live action movies, I mean, I don't know if it's the best, but it's definitely got to be one of the best, just because I haven't been a big fan of a lot of the live action stuff they've been putting out in the last 10 years or so.
Sure.
So I thought this was going to be a piece of crap.
Yeah.
You know, when I saw it, and I love Emma Stone and Emma Thompson. Sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, I saw it and I'm like, all right, here we go again. You know, it's almost 2.5 hours. It's Disney trying to do something other than what they're great at, which is just, you know, family animation.
Sure.
This is not going to, it's going to be another dud. But in my opinion, it wasn't. It was really a pleasant surprise for me. And I agree with you. There's a lot of things that don't work about it. And I'm sure we'll get into it. But at the end of the day, it's definitely a film that I enjoyed and that I probably will revisit.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, there's going to be plenty to talk about the movie itself along the way, but I think we should just start jumping into puzzle pieces here. What do you got for your first puzzle piece for Cruella?
Yeah, I assume we're going to have some crossover, so I'm going to kind of start with the obvious ones. I've got a couple kind of like super obvious puzzle pieces.
Sure.
And the first one is going to be Maleficent from 2014, starring Angelina Jolie. I mean, it's a very similar story, right, where we're kind of getting the origin of this Disney villain. I don't know. I kind of want to defer to you on which one of the two of these you might prefer more.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like maybe recency bias might be hurting me a little bit. And also my love for Emma Stone is like very strong. So
right, right.
I might prefer Cruella.
I think Maleficent was well done. And of course, Angelina Jolie is just, you know, so easy to watch. She's a really great performer. But this movie, though, was, I think, just a lot more fun and had more reason for being, kind of, even if the direction they took was a little strange as far as like changing the character and stuff like that and making so many changes to who Cruella DeVille is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think using Maleficent as a puzzle piece has to be in the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few different ones, and there's actually a couple more, but I mean, just like in the Disney properties, I think Maleficent's like kind of, I don't know, just jumped to mind immediately because it's like they're both female, they're both, you know, villainesses that are kind of like, you know, their origins are different. Like the reason they're evil is different. Yeah. You know, it's a little more, I'll say it makes a little more sense in Maleficent's case as far, and maybe I'll be able to tell you what I mean by that. The one major issue I had with Cruella is that her reason for becoming so villainous just doesn't really make sense to me. It's kind of dumb.
Sure. Yeah.
So, which was my major issue with the film.
Yeah.
But overall, I mean, they're both Disney villains that are iconic at this point in time, and they had to start somewhere. So I feel like Maleficent's a pretty easy comparison.
I feel like Cruella is so evil that they just didn't know how to ride that line, you know? Yeah. And it's like they just kind of pulled back so much that it got to the point where it just doesn't make sense as a character. But
yeah, you could be right there.
I agree with that, though. I'm going to go to another puzzle piece here. I know we've got plenty between the two of us. So I am going to go with one. I'm going to kick mine off with something that's not actually a movie. But I think it's an important thing to get in at the beginning of the conversation here. And this is more of a kind of a concept, an idea, a weird puzzle piece. But a Nancy Sinatra, "These Boots Were Made for Walking" Pandora station. It's just song after song that would play after, if you were to type in Nancy Sinatra, "These Boots Were Made for Walking." I didn't even notice the Nicholas Britell score, and I love him so much.
Yeah.
But
great.
Because the movie is just wall-to-wall needle drops. We've got Nina Simone, the Bee Gees, the Rolling Stones, David Bowie, Blondie, Queen. I think Collider put out a ranked list of all of the songs today, and it was like 32 songs.
Mm-hmm.
It's insane. It's absolutely insane. You got to think about the music budget too, that they, you know, to get all these songs, but I mean, that's Disney for you.
Yeah, but exactly.
Yeah, this movie is, you could not watch it, but just put it on in the background while you clean the house, you know?
Yeah, you could. It's like a jukebox, this movie.
It really is.
Especially like transport yourself back to the 70s where a lot of those songs came from. So can I ask, since you brought that up?
Sure.
Because I actually like the soundtrack and I like the use of music in this film. And I know you and I have talked on my show before about, you know, your connection to music and movies and popular culture and that kind of stuff. I like it, but it seems to be a critical divide. It seems to be a little divisive, and a lot of people, even friends of mine in the critical community, don't like the overuse, as they put it, of music in the movie in replacement of kind of like original score. What do you think? I'm curious.
Yeah, I'm definitely a little bit torn on that, because like I said, that not hearing the Nicholas Britell score kind of bothers me, but at the same time, when I first got out of this movie and I started seeing all those reactions to the fact that there's so much music, so many songs being used in this. My first thought about that was, I think you guys are missing the point that people are going to love this. Like, yeah. People are going to love just being entertained by, you know, a moving, fun soundtrack the whole time. And I mean, 2.5 hours is a long time, you know, for this kind of a movie. And that music, I think, helps keep it moving for that whole runtime.
Yeah, the reason why it works for me, well, first of all, I'm a sucker for that. And like I said, we've talked about that on my show before, but I'm a sucker for that. And, you know, Tarantino and Scorsese, and all these filmmakers that really have a knack for working with the right, you know, music collaborators to put these songs in the right place and in the right scene. I'm not saying every song in Cruella, like, the scene wouldn't work without them. That's not what I'm saying. But I think because of this kind of like punk rock, steampunk kind of vibe in London that the movie's taking place, that was a huge part of the scene and of the fashion scene in London.
Sure.
So if you, in other words, if you were there and you were a part of Cruella's crew or you were hanging out in London at that time, you would hear all of these songs. You know what I mean? Like, right. It wouldn't be crazy to hear these songs playing, you know, every 10 or 15 minutes because they were all over the place back then. So that's why it kind of works for me.
The only one that's a little hard to defend is I Want to Be Your Dog. Is when it gets a little eye-rolly, you know?
That was a bit, that was thrown in for maybe a little thick irony, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. But, you know, to your point, though, she sings "These Boots Are Made for Walking" in the movie, Emma Stone.
Yeah, absolutely. And, so and, that one fits.
It was really prominent, yeah.
No. Yeah. All right. Well, what do you got for your next piece?
All right, well, I'm wondering if I should give you another obvious one here, but I guess because I had really two obvious ones, so I'll go ahead and get the other obvious one out of the way, which would be 2019's Joker with Joaquin Phoenix. So what if Joker from 2019 was produced by Disney? I feel like it would be Cruella.
Right.
You know, a very dark character at its core, and obviously for Disney and being on Disney Plus and kind of being, you know, marketed to families and that kind of thing, and then obviously wanting to get the PG-13 or lower rating, it's tamed down a little bit, right? And it does tiptoe around some of the dark kind of like mental health issues that we see in Joker. And then obviously we don't see, you know, the murder and the blood and gore, at least not to the extent that we see in Todd Phillips' film. And I wasn't a big fan of Joker. I like it. I think it's a quote-unquote good movie, but I wasn't a huge proponent of it getting Oscar nominations and all that kind of stuff. So I'm more on the kind of mediocre side of that particular film. But in Cruella, I just see a lot of those parallels to this character that starts as kind of an underdog that you really sympathize with, and over the course of the movie turns into this really just disgusting kind of villain that you can't pull for, even though you were pulling for them in the first half of the movie. And Joker was very similar in that way. And then, you know, just like my Maleficent puzzle piece, you know, this is a villain origin story, a very popular villain origin story. So for that reason too.
Sure. Yeah. I have Joker on my list as well. I mean, I think it's one that as soon as the first trailer came out, I think a lot of us were thinking, oh, Disney's got a Joker now. You know, they get this incredibly evil villain character that they could try to make us sympathize with and show their rise to becoming the character that we know them as. And it's something we've already kind of talked about a little bit, but just the fact that they're kind of sanding that down a little bit and trying to, you know, keep her the hero of this story and make somebody worse than her with the Baroness, with Emma Thompson. And she's great, by the way. And she's like so much fun to watch. And I mean, I think that is the right approach, is to make somebody more evil, because otherwise it's like, how do you identify with this person? And I think that's part of what people maybe had trouble with Joker, but you know, definitely this is the more fun version, because Joker is about as bleak as it comes.
I agree, you know, and that's why I preface it with saying, you know, if Disney were to get its hands on Joker, you know, and make that movie, what would it look like? And it would probably be very similar to Cruella.
Yeah, sure.
I think, you know, so, and I think that, I don't know when development started on Cruella, but you got to think if it started after the success of Joker, they were probably influenced by it in some way to make it too, because of how successful, how many awards nominations it received. And it, you know, it was one of those movies that was great for moviegoers and made a ton of money. And it also really, the critical community also really responded to it. The awards circuit did. So it was kind of that perfect movie that was bringing in both. Now, if Cruella had come out later this year, I would not have been shocked at all if it had been in the awards discussion for the Oscars next year. But, you know, with a May release, I don't
know. Well, especially with the reaction it's gotten. Yeah. I mean, people are really enjoying it. And while, you know, the snootier of our, you know, film community maybe turn their nose up at it, it's something that's going to connect with most people. And I know, obviously, with the viewership being down, you know, these past few years, I'm sure they're trying to get more of these populist, you know, type films to get more of attention to it. But I'm going to go to another puzzle piece, and I'm going to stick with DC comic book characters, because I'm going to go with Superman, because Cruella starts off life as Estella and just dyes her hair, and immediately no one recognizes her, and she is this totally other person, which is a hilarious thing.
I mean,
it's great. Yeah, it's fun. I mean, we accepted it with Superman. Why not accept it here? You know,
exactly. Yeah, I have one that's similar, I think, why you pick Superman, but I don't want to cut you off though. So,
oh no, I'd love to hear it. What do you have there?
So, and I was going to say, hear me out on this. But with you doing the Superman pick, I feel like maybe it might make sense to you personally, but I'll tell the listeners to hear me out on this.
Sure.
But the next one I'm going to take is my next puzzle piece is The Empire Strikes Back.
Sure.
All right.
I had a feeling this is where we were going right now.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, just really the whole Skywalker saga, really. But
sure.
To kind of niche it down to one movie, I would say Empire Strikes Back, because you have a situation where this orphan kid believes that the big bad, it killed his parent, right? Mm-hmm. And then it turns out, well, guess what? The big bad is your parent. Okay, so that is the arc of the Skywalker saga, and that's what ends. And I've listened to your show before, so I assume you're okay with spoilers, David.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, but that's ultimately what ends up happening in Cruella too, with the Baroness and how that whole storyline plays out with the cliff at the end and the whole thing. So it's basically the same arc, if you think of the Baroness as the big bad that really was responsible for bringing out this evil in Cruella, and even more so as an extension as to what happened to her, what we'll just call adoptive mother, I guess, in Cruella, and what happens to her, and then the situation with Luke Skywalker and Anakin, Darth Vader, and that whole thing. So it's a very similar arc, and I mean, I don't know that you would get a lot of argument from people if you think of, you know, Luke, I am your father. I mean, it's one of the most iconic movie scenes in all of cinema history.
Totally.
So, of course, let's try to mimic that storyline in some way, because it obviously worked. So Empire Strikes Back is a piece for me.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense to try to mimic that. But at the same time, I think it takes a lot of balls just knowing everyone is going to think like they're doing Star Wars here,
right?
You know, and I mean it makes for a you know, a fun twist, and I think it works within the world of this story. I mean, you know, obviously if Cruella is, you know, has this bad blood in her where she could become this big villain, you know, it kind of makes sense that this other big theatrical, you know, presence that's also incredibly evil would you know, possibly be related to her in some way.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go on to another piece here, and I'm going to dig into the fashion aspect of this movie and talk about Zoolander.
All right.
because we have these two just constantly trying to one-up each other with their signature styles and looks. And to get even deeper into it, she basically does derelict the classic Zoolander look, where he looks, I guess, like a homeless person covered in trash.
Right.
And it's obviously so ridiculous in that movie. And in this, it's just one of the many big over-the-top spectacles she does to try to draw attention away from the Baroness and kind of ruin her whole situation. It's part of the whole almost montage-like sequence of her kind of getting even with her and trying to drive her crazy. But yeah, this whole back and forth between the two of them and setting it in the fashion world, amplified by all the music choices we were talking about earlier, makes for this big, like, high fashion world head to head, and very, very much like everything that happened with Zoolander.
Yeah, I love that mention for Zoolander. I did not think about that one. My next puzzle piece is going to be directly related to fashion, though. But what I just wanted to say real quick while we're on this subject, though, is this was my main issue with this movie. Mm-hmm. Now, if it weren't for this weird through line for Cruella's character development in this film, I would have probably given this like, this would have been like a near perfect movie for me. If you shave 20 minutes off of it and you take away this weird through line, which is her wanting to one up the Baroness, mm-hmm. which for the last two thirds of the movie is really all that's happening, is that she goes to work for her to like get the insider information. And, you know, she, like you said, she's doing all these different things to try to take the attention away from the Baroness. And it's like, that just seems really like shallow and like not a legitimate reason for her to become the Cruella de Vil that we know 20 years later in the story.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
this is the non-violent version.
Yeah, I guess.
Is what it is, yeah. You know?
I guess so. But that was what I was alluding to earlier. I don't know if you saw that on my review I did a few days ago, but that's what I was alluding to earlier, that just really was hard for me to believe, really. Like, you know, right. Like, this is not... The way Emma Stone portrays Cruella in this movie does not lend to what we know her to become, in my opinion. And this whole fashion kind of like storyline is fun. Like it's fun to watch. It's done really well. It just doesn't make sense for what we ultimately know that she's going to be. You know. So I just wanted to mention that since you brought it up.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point to go to a quick little tangent before we get to your next puzzle piece. But in trying to, something we've been talking about here like the whole time, and trying to like kind of water down who the character is going to become, you know, I was trying to think of an origin story or prequel that just totally changed some major element of a character that we know so well. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really like come up with like a good one here, but it's just, that's a thing that this movie really, really does. And I do think it's kind of like you're saying here that whole segment is like the weakest part of the movie for you. I think just the idea of watering her down, I think you have to do it, but at the same time, I don't know that they did it necessarily in the best possible way.
Right. I think that's fair. I mean, I think it with it being Disney and with them wanting to appeal to families, like you said, it's like they kind of have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
If this had been a Joker, like we were talking about earlier, they don't have to do it, you know, and they can go the taxi driver route and just, you know, have blood and gore everywhere and have their R rating and everything's fine. So I think that, I mean, it makes sense why they did it from like a production standpoint, just from, you know, and my kid's not going to know, like my 8-year-old son watched this movie and he loved it. He wants to watch it again already. And I'm like, dude, chill out. Like, we'll watch it again. But he loved it. You know, he doesn't know. I mean, he's seen the Dalmatians in the cartoon and that kind of stuff. But you know what I mean? So in other words, I guess it's okay if you're not an old fart like me that's going, Cruella's a lot more evil than just worrying about this dress or whatever. Do you know what I mean? So
totally. It's like you kind of, you look at it and you're like, God, she's rude. You know, like.
right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, my next puzzle piece goes along with fashion as well. And I think it's another pretty obvious one, but I'm going to say The Devil Wears Prada.
Absolutely.
From 2006, and really because of the similarities between the Baroness, which you already mentioned was played to perfection by Emma Thompson, who's an absolute queen, and then talk about queens, Meryl Streep, who plays Miranda in The Devil Wears Prada. So they both have this tyrannical kind of like leadership where they, you know, have to be the best in their field. They have to be the best fashion designer, and they're going to take no prisoners to get there. So they're very ruthless in the way they deal with their employees and their colleagues. You know, in Devil Wears Prada, it's Anne Hathaway. And here it's Estella, played by Emma Stone. So it's a very similar parallel arc in terms of trying to get that fashion trophy, that golden number one ribbon. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. That movie, I think, is a huge influence on this movie. And I think it makes a lot of sense to use that as an inspiration for the story that this movie is trying to tell, for this particular character moving up the ranks of the fashion world and having the Baroness be this fashion, you know, magnet, and to use that, because that is like the ultimate when it comes to somebody just being the hierarchy of that and trying to work your way in, and it's like kind of an impossible task to get your way into that world. And that movie is so much fun, The Devil Wears Prada.
Really,
I haven't watched
is.
It in a long time, but it definitely, it kind of hits the same vein.
It really is. It's one of Meryl Streep's best too. And I love a ton of her movies. And I would probably put this in my top five Meryl Streeps just because she gets to play that just unsavory, like, I mean, it's Meryl Streep.
Sure. So,
You're like, absolutely. You're like, this is Julia Child. This is the sweetest woman in the world. You know what I mean? And yeah. She just gets to really like eat up that movie. She chews it up, you know, and she just takes on a different role for her. So it's always been one of my favorite Meryl Streep roles too. And you can see, you know, I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen any interviews or anything, but I would suspect that Emma Thompson really borrowed from, you know, those types of performances where these actresses had these kind of like one-offs. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And it was very different from Meryl Streep at the time.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, I'll go to another puzzle piece, and I definitely could have brought this one up after we talked about Joker, but I'm going to go with Birds of Prey and specifically the Harley Quinn character.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Played by Margot Robbie. And, you know, just this female protagonist with a whole punk rock aesthetic and, you know, going bad, but also being the hero, even though she's bad, you know, and leaning very much into the whole she's a bit much kind of thing, you know, that right. whole kind of attitude.
Sure.
But pulling it off in a way that, you know, I keep calling this movie fun, but I think that that's like the main takeaway that, you know, to watch her go over the top and go evil and be so gleeful in it is where the fun comes from.
Yeah, you know, I've said on my show before, I'm a huge proponent of Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn, even though I hated Suicide Squad.
It was one of the worst.
One of the worst movies of the decade, in my opinion. One of the biggest disappointments. Now, with that being said, Birds of Prey, the follow-up, I loved. I thought it was great.
Sure.
In fact, it would be on par somewhat with my enjoyment, at least for a film like Cruella. But, you know, Birds of Prey also similar to Joker, where they have the R rating, they have the liberties to do what they do because it's not Disney. It's not, you know, targeted toward families necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
So it's obviously going to be a little more dark and a little more twisted. But I feel like you're right. I mean, Harley Quinn and Cruella portrayed by Emma Stone here, there's a lot of similarities where they're almost like that anti-hero, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And or at least in this movie. Now, of course, we know Cruella de Vil is just a straight up villain eventually.
Yeah, yeah.
But in this movie, she's definitely portrayed as an anti-hero, and I think Harley Quinn is as well in the whole Suicide Squad franchise, where, and really in the comics too. And Catwoman, you could say the same thing about somebody like Catwoman, where it's like they're bad, you know, they're a villain, but you still kind of pull for them. And right. That's kind of what's happening in Cruella also, because you know what plays out with Cruella with her mother and everything, so you do kind of feel that sympathy for her. So it is similar in that way. I think Harley Quinn's a great analogy to use for her.
Yeah, and it also helps. I mean, you know, more spoilers for the movie, but it also helps that she keeps and loves her dog the entire movie. That like really helps like soften the blow of what you at least think she's going to become.
Yeah, yeah. You're right. Well, you ready for mine?
Let's do it.
Let me get a few left field ones here. I don't know. I mean, maybe I think of them as left field picks, but I don't know. Maybe I went through my Blu-ray collection and I was like, going through them, and I had to stop and say, what's the plot of this? Okay, yes, that kind of. And this one really stood out to me. It's also a movie that I love, which probably helps. And it also helps that I just recently talked about this movie in depth on my podcast.
Okay.
So it was fresh in my memory. I just rewatched it a couple weeks ago. But I'm going to go with Black Swan.
Okay.
Darren Aronofsky. You know, this is a film about duality, right? So Natalie Portman, and possibly her best role. If you ask me, I'm going to say it's her best role. But people could argue that. Point. I mean, she's a great actress.
I mean, she's got a lot of great roles, but I think I would probably go with Black Swan as well.
Yeah, I love this movie, man. And Aronofsky's could be hit or miss, but this is a movie that just was a 10 out of 10 for me. I absolutely loved it when it came out in 2010. And she won the Academy Award for that. So Natalie Portman is the classic story of the Swan Princess is what they use as the kind of like outline for this movie. But like I said, the duality. So you have the good Swan who's dressed in white, right? And then you have this evil Swan, kind of like an alter ego almost, that's dressed in black. So Cruella de Vil is literally split down the middle, and I'm talking about like as you see her, because she has the black side of her hair and the white side of her hair.
Totally.
So, and then we have the Estella character, who we know is this pure, genuine, kind of sweet, you know, petty thief that her friends love, and they just have such a great camaraderie. And then you have Cruella when she takes on this evil persona that really takes over. And it's almost like a split personality, and the duality exists there too. Again, they're not going to be able to explore it from as dark a side as Aronofsky did and Natalie Portman did, but the similarities are there for me, and it really jumped out to me. So Black Swan is a puzzle piece for me.
Sure. Yeah, I think that that absolutely works, and I love the analogy with the hair. I think that that, you know, that splits her personality right down the middle, which especially with how you know, how she's portrayed in this, like we were talking about, like more of an anti-hero than a straight villain. I think that 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 works perfectly.
Cool, man.
I'm going to go on to my last piece here, and here's the thing. This is kind of a weird piece because the first one is a movie that came out not too long ago, so probably not particularly a puzzle piece. But then I also am going to mention a movie that was a puzzle piece for that movie, although I haven't seen it in a million years, so I kind of don't remember it well enough to actually talk about it that much. So the movie, the main movie I'm using here as a puzzle piece, is the new live-action Tom and Jerry movie.
Oh, interesting.
Which right. I'm one of the few people who actually enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. It was just really dumb. Very dumb, sure. But fun, you know? The puzzle piece was how to succeed in business without really trying. Both of these movies feature, all three of these movies really, feature somebody who is, you know, trying to get in working at this fancy establishment. And, you know, they are really not qualified necessarily for the job, but they kind of fudge things to make their way in. Specifically with Tom and Jerry, the main character played by Chloe Grace Moretz is, you know, she's kind of a troublemaker, kind of into light, petty criminal things, you know, kind of like here in this movie, how Estella is doing little crimes with her two little buddies. Of course, in Tom and Jerry, she ends up teaming up with and getting help from Tom and Jerry during the process of all the wackiness that ensues. Whereas here, we've got Jasper and Horace, played by Joel Fry and Paul Walter Hauser, who basically are playing these characters like you could picture them being cartoon animals if this was animated. You know,
yes, they really, good point.
They feel like a cartoon cat and dog or cat and mouse or something who would just get into trouble and, you know, scatter away when the, you know, the authorities are coming and stuff like that. So I just feel like there's a lot of similarities between these movies and the way that, you know, of course she's going to get in trouble. Of course things are going to go crazy. Of course the big ballroom is going to get destroyed, which it does in Tom and Jerry. It does here in Cruella.
Sure.
Yeah. So yeah, I just thought that they go really well together as movies where somebody kind of lies their way in and then everything goes screwy from there.
That's crazy, man. I, you know, I don't know if you saw my Black Swan pick coming, but I didn't see your Tom and Jerry pick coming. That was that's a good
I imagine
one,
nobody will, but
yeah, I don't think so, but that's a good one. And you know, as an extension, you could really just say Tom and Jerry period, you know.
Sure.
The cat and mouse game, which really is a component to this film, especially in that kind of middle, like heart of the film.
Yeah, but absolutely,
I love Paul Walter Hauser. He really impresses me in everything he's in. And I thought, you know, to your point, it was a little slapstick at times, but I thought they did a really good job because how hard is it to be on camera with Emma Thompson and Emma Stone? Sure. I mean, you got to feel like you're just like an extra, basically.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and acting against their little dogs, too.
Yeah, right.
You know, exactly. Wink the dog, and I forget what the other one's name is, but I don't know cute. If they were all CGI or a mix of CGI, but yeah, I mean, they did a great job of doing the comedy bits with them, you know?
Yeah. Well, let me give, I'll give you another puzzle piece, and then if you want kind of like, you know, I have a couple outlier ones if you want them or whatever, but I want to make sure I mentioned, which also lends to my earlier puzzle piece as to why I feel like Craig Gillespie and the people involved in making this project were definitely influenced by the Joker. Because if you're talking about a villain origin story, at least in like modern day pop culture, I don't know that there's a villain more prominent than Joker, right? Sure. Now that's a DC Batman comic. That's not a Disney story or whatever. And I mentioned Joker earlier. I'm going to mention The Dark Knight here, okay?
Okay.
And the reason why I think this speaks to my earlier piece of the Joker, too, and it's just basically just the lore of the Joker, I feel like I could actually put here. But The Dark Knight, there's a scene when Heath Ledger, which, by the way, was one of the most amazing performances ever in film, he comes into Bruce Wayne's fundraiser for Harvey Dent. And, you know, he comes in and like, basically terrorizes all the guests there. And then we have the scene in Cruella when Cruella shows up to the gala and she kind of invades the gala and kind of takes over, has the rats going around and everything. So she kind of takes over there, right? And then there's another scene later that you actually already mentioned when she's wearing the trash, like all the garbage as a dress or whatever. And she's riding away in London, hanging onto the side of the garbage truck, like laughing maniacally. And,
sure.
And this is, there's an almost exact same scene with Heath Ledger hanging outside of a cop car in the dark night, and he's kind of laughing as they're driving through the rain. So again, it's going to be darker in Christopher Nolan's film, right? It's going to be a little more menacing, a little more dark. But if you put these two split screen, these two scenes I just mentioned split screen next to each other, and I didn't do that because I don't have the technology to do that, but I did watch them back before coming on your show.
I'm sure you've
got
something on your computer that
I could figure it out, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But I did watch these particular scenes back in doing homework for your show, and they play very, very similarly. Again, you know, the one on the left from Nolan is much darker, and the one on the right is much more fun. Like, everybody's laughing. Like, oh, it's funny that these guys are swinging from curtains. And like, but at the end of the day, they're the same scene. And the same thing can be said for the garbage truck and the cop car, too. They're very, very similar. And to me, that just says that, you know, Craig Gillespie or whoever was involved with these storyboarding knew about these types of scenes and wanted to recreate them in a Disney way.
Sure.
And I feel like they did. I feel like they did a great job of making kind of a fun version of some of those scenes from movies like The Dark Knight and Joker.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as long as we're back on the Joker himself, and, you know, one other point about him is, you know, all these different portrayals of him over the years, the one thing that they kind of all have in common is go big. You know, and if you're going to play Cruella, I mean, that's kind of what you have to do is go big. So I think there's a similar thing in the approach to actually taking on that character is you have to just go as big as you can because that's what it requires.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, larger than life, especially in the world of Disney, you know, and if people that are tuning into this, most likely, I mean, of course, not everyone, but most likely people that are going out to the theater to see this, because I mean, come on, we're at the end of a pandemic here. So. You know, if people are going to go out and they're comfortable doing that, they must want to do it, you know? So
sure.
If they're going to do that, most likely they know who Cruella de Vil is. You know, they know about the story. They saw 101 Dalmatians as a kid or read it or whatever. So this is a character that most people seeing this movie, with the exception of maybe like my eight-year-old son, are going to know who it is, you know, so they're going to expect this larger than life kind of origin story, which also lends to the Joker story too, like you mentioned.
Definitely. So you said you have one more piece that you wanted to bring up?
Well, I'll just kind of list them. I had a couple here, man.
Okay.
And I'll just list them and see if you know what I'm talking about.
Sure, go for it.
But one is from 1982's Annie, or you could just say Annie the musical.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously Orphan Annie. So we have a situation here with Estella. There's a scene early on in the movie where she's the young Estella, and she's basically a recluse, and she's on the run because of what happened to her mother. And she's running through the streets of London, and she's being chased, and that's when she meets, you know, the two dudes that end up becoming her lifelong confidants.
Yeah.
And that scene is very similar to a scene that plays out in Annie with the dogs chasing her, and then you have the whole orphanage and the whole orphan story built into it as well. So I thought of Annie. Actually, my wife thought of it. My wife thought of it. She mentioned it to me. She's like, you're going to say Annie, right? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess I am. Yeah, it makes sense.
Nice.
And then the only other one that I didn't mention yet is My Fair Lady with Audrey Hepburn.
Okay.
Another musical. Actually, two musicals back to back there. But this one is, again, you have the black and white duality when Audrey Hepburn's character finally gets to her full like power up, like she's, you know, this pristine, like, you know, debutante finally. And she has the black and white get up that she wears that's very iconic. It's on the cover of the poster. This was nominated for a ton of Academy Awards and she won Best Actress for it. And Audrey Hepburn is the definition of like old school Hollywood starlet.
Sure.
And I feel like from a fashion standpoint and then the duality standpoint of, so Eliza Doolittle's character, is the duality in this case is not necessarily good and evil, but it's like poor and rich, right? So when she starts out, she's just very poor character that doesn't even know how to speak proper English. And then by the end of the movie, she's turned into this debutante who's like perfect, you know?
Right.
So, but she's still the same person, obviously. So you have her kind of both sides of that personality always exist. And I feel like that's similar in Cruella's respect as well. So that's why I wanted to say My Fair Lady, but that was all the pieces I had.
Beautiful. Well, let's go ahead and do the finished puzzle, and then we will get into any closing thoughts here. But for the finished puzzle for Cruella, we talked about Maleficent, These boots were made for walking Pandora Station. Joker, Superman, The Empire Strikes Back, Zoolander, The Devil Wears Prada, Birds of Prey, Black Swan, Tom and Jerry, The Dark Knight, Annie and My Fair Lady. Mm-hmm. We got a great list of pieces here. Obviously, things from the worlds of you know, comic book movies, also Disney stuff, also, you know, just big, huge movies, really. I mean, this is a crowd-pleasing kind of a movie, you know, and I think it takes big swings and has, you know, its sights set high for entertaining its audience, which is the reason why I think people are connecting with it so much. But do you have any, like, closing thoughts or anything we didn't quite get to while going through the puzzle pieces?
I think we touched on most of it. You know, my closing thoughts about Cruella just as a picture is that it was the definition of a pleasant surprise. I mean, it really surprised me because Disney hasn't been able to figure it out until this movie, in my opinion, when it comes to origin stories or live actions. You know, even as much as I love Angelina Jolie, I couldn't get into the Maleficent movies. So this is the first time where I've been like, in other words, it's the first Disney live action in a long time that I'll rewatch. Like, that I'll watch more than one time. And that's a feat lately. But, you know, Emma Stone killed it. Emma Thompson, the performances are tremendous. I love the direction in the film. I love the aesthetic of the film. It's very, almost like 90s Tim Burton, almost, where it's like a little, you know, Batman Returns, kind of like dark and gothic.
Sure.
In a way.
That could have been a good piece, actually.
That could have been a good one, too. And I thought about it as well. You know, but that could have been, you know what I mean? Like, it's a little dark, a little gothic, but it's still fun, right? Yeah. You know, and families and kids can still enjoy it. And, you know, they had to tame it down for that reason. And frankly, I'm okay with the fact that they did that because I see the Disney logo at the beginning and the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So I understand where that's coming from, you know, a making money standpoint. But yeah, I love this movie, man. I it really, really surprised me because it's rare that I go into a movie. And I saw this on Disney Plus. I didn't see it in the theater. Mm-hmm. And I know you saw it in advance, but I went into this movie literally thinking I was going to hate it. I was literally like not even remotely looking forward to watching it. And about 30 minutes into it, I'm going, why am I enjoying this? Like, this is like, why do I like this?
Right.
You know what I mean? I kept liking it and, you know, hearing more songs and like, it just grew on me as the movie went on. With that being said, I feel like it was about 20 minutes too long.
Right.
And I wish they had shaved some off of it because then I would have loved it. But at the end of the day, I did really like it.
Yeah, I agree. The length is, we've complained about a few little things here and there, but I think the length is the number one issue with the movie. I mean, there's nothing wrong with a 2.5 hour, 2 hour, 20 minutes, whatever it is movie, but this one didn't need to be that long. You know, this story didn't need to be that long. But yeah, I mean, I went into it, I think, specifically for Emma Stone going big. That's what I was looking for, and that's what I got, you know. And I think she's really fun in it. Everyone else is really fun in it. Paul Walter Hauser is great.
He's the best.
He's so much fun. But I think that about does it for Cruella, though. I think we got to it all. Is there another movie you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
So I don't know if I'd say I call it a movie. But I don't know, people are not saying it's a movie, but it's a comedy special from Bo Burnham called Inside. Have you heard of this?
Yeah, I watched it today, actually.
And it's good, right?
It's so good.
I'm glad you liked it, because I don't know what I would have said. I mean, I love him anyway, so I'm a little biased. But this one was so different because, you know, when I did my little YouTube review of it earlier today, actually, I said it was a transcendent experience. And how many comedy specials can you say are a transcendent experience? But Bo Burnham filmed all of these different skits and music videos and like songs that he performed and everything. And he also had behind the scenes cameras set up all over his apartment. So he just filmed like just a ton of footage over the course of a year being trapped in his apartment because of the pandemic, which is why it's called Inside, right? So he's on lockdown like the rest of, you know, America. And he's a single guy. So he's literally at home by himself, just creating this, what we ended up seeing on Netflix last week, which is called Inside. But it's really great because it's really funny, which he's known for. So the comedy didn't go anywhere. The comedy is still there. But what I think is really just like beyond amazing with Inside is that it really, he was really willing to show us what the pandemic did to him personally.
Right.
And it really shows his descent into kind of like, his mental health issues and like the loneliness that he was feeling and how that was all compounding on him. And then the pressure of making that movie was compounding on him. And he, you know, there's one little scene in the thing where he's like, I'm not even going to do this anymore. I'm just going to make this movie forever. I'm just going to keep filming scenes. And then when I die, they'll have all this footage. Like, because he just didn't want to do it anymore. It was so taxing on him. And the pandemic is really at the core. But yeah, I mean, especially if anybody likes Bo Burnham, you know, he directed Eighth Grade. He was in Promising Young Woman last year. But since he was like 15, he's been doing YouTube comedy bits and songs and stuff. He's just a very artistic creator, you know, and I really like him. I think he has a really strong voice in the arts. And it's on Netflix right now. It's called Inside. I recommend anybody check it out. It's not for the kids, though. It's NSFW. But
yes,
it's good.
I would say that. I would definitely say that. But it's great. Everybody should definitely check it out. And thank you so much for doing the show, Gerald. Why don't you tell people again where they can find your podcast?
Yeah, man. Well, I'm doing this different thing where if I'm a guest, and I'm grateful to be a guest on your show, David. Thanks so much for having me, man. But I'm just doing this thing where I'm pumping up my YouTube channel. I'm trying to get subscribers and people to check out my stuff over there because I'm really having fun doing that lately. I'm getting into video editing, so it's cool to kind of have an outlet for that. But yeah, the easiest thing to do is just go to youtube.com/2peasonapodcast. That's T-W-O spelled out. And then we do have a website that has all the links for everything as well, including the actual podcast where you can subscribe to the feed. But that's just 2peasonapod.com.
Awesome. Well, again, thanks so much for doing the show. And if you ever need a guest again sometime, I'd love to be on your show again sometime.
It won't be long, man. It won't be long. Pitch me a topic. And I'm actually lining up shows for July and August right now. So I'd love to have you back.
Let's do it.
All right, brother.
Hi, I'm Dietrich.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Ben.
We're from the podcast That Song From That Movie, the journey through the very best and worst of movie songs.
We want you to join us on our voyage across the cinematic sound waves as we take a deep dive on a new song and movie each week to figure out just what makes them tick.
Already we've set sail with Celine Dion on the Titanic, found a friend in Toy Story, and gotten drenched out in the rain with Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Hopefully each breakdown allows us to answer the ultimate question of what's better, the movie or the song. Or at least learn something new along the way.
Just like learning that Toy Story 4 is a meaningless cash grab without a soul.
You can subscribe right now on all good podcast platforms. If you use one of the bad ones, then that's on you, and we can't be held responsible.
Subscribe to That Song From That Movie.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Cruella. Thanks to Gerald, again, from 2 Peas on a Podcast, for joining me for that one. And we mentioned me maybe joining him again on his podcast one of these days. And I just want to mention, I recently updated our piecingpod.com website. And if you go to the links section, you'll get links to every guest appearance I have ever done on lots and lots and lots of other podcasts. I do guest appearances at least, I would say, like 3-4 times a month on other people's podcasts. And if you're listening and you have a podcast and you'd like me to join you on your podcast, get in touch with me. I'd love to do it. Anytime it's about movies or music or podcasting in general, I am happy to join and have a good conversation. Or I'll even talk about other stuff too. So get in touch. So that does it for today. I want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. Don't forget about the Produced by David Rosen Patreon. I mentioned it all at the top of the show. I do also want to mention really quickly that it is June 2021 right now. And at the time of this recording, we are getting really, really close to 50,000 downloads, which is just so insane for this podcast. I mean, this is a completely independent thing, something that I just do here alone in my room, just talking to people about movies and having fun doing it. And it's just really exciting to see that people are out there listening and that it just keeps growing. So I just want to thank you all so much for listening. I'm probably going to bring this up a bunch because 50,000 is a pretty big milestone. So you may hear me talk about this in some upcoming episodes, but I just want to make sure that anyone who is a listener hears that I am grateful for that. So let's close this thing out with a piece of music like I always do. And any movie that has a little something to do with dogs or cats, in this case dogs, I've got to play a piece of music from my many times delayed The Pup Pups album. For those that don't know, The Pup Pups is a little comedy album I've been working on for a decade or something now. And it just kept getting put on the back burner, Then I couldn't work on it for whatever reason. And then my dogs got sick, and one of them actually passed away. One of them got really sick, and we almost lost them. And it's just one thing after another. I have not put this thing out, but it is going to come out one of these days, maybe this year. But the album is all these silly little fun songs about my dogs. Some of them actually sung from the point of view of the dogs. They're actually doing the singing, also the cats as well. And it's a very ridiculous, silly, fun album. And I'm really looking forward to putting it out one of these days. But I'm going to play a song from that. And I think a good one to play for this particular episode, this is actually like a perfect fit for Cruella. I'm going to play a song called I'm in Trouble. And it's sung by my dog, the Sadie Pup, who is the one who passed away a couple of years ago. Right when I was, you know, in the middle of actually finishing a lot of these songs. And I was just, you know, really looking forward to going out there and actually maybe doing some live shows and having her and her brother Harvey like be like sitting up there on stage with me as we sang the songs. And so it was terrible that she just got sick just out of the blue like that. And, you know, you just never know. But I love my Sadie, and she was so cute. She was always living life to the fullest and always getting in trouble. And so this is a song that she sings called I'm in Trouble. It will eventually be on the Pup Pups album. Enjoy it, and we'll be back with more Piecing It Together coming up real soon.
I'm in trouble again, I'm in trouble, I'm in trouble again. Another day goes by, as the world turns, I'm in trouble again. Cause I never learn, I'm in trouble. This time I really messed up, but it's not my fault. I'm just a cute little pup, I'm in trouble. I did something real bad, I'm gonna get in trouble.
West Production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.